being home, finding himself immediately embroiled in the chaos of having to rescue his mother and son from neighbors who had taken them. When he resolved that, again having to kill, he hoped the worst was over. He was home now. He and his family were together. They could hunker down, bury their heads, and weather the hard times. If only it were so easy. No one in Jim's original group found their return home to be as idyllic as expected. While Jim tried to get settled back into life in his valley, his friend and traveling companion Gary was dealing with his own issues in the town where he lived. Gary was also prepared for hard times, though the location where his family built their home was not defensible. Living on the edge of a densely populated town, they were vulnerable to attack. When Gary communicated with Jim and found that there were empty homes in the secluded valley where Jim lived, Gary made the tough call to pack up his family and leave their home. He was not able to do so before he lost a son-in-law in a violent episode that left Gary's daughter depressed and catatonic. In their rattled state, they made the journey and moved into an empty house not far from Jim's. Randy lived with her two daughters and her grandchildren miles from any town. They lived near her father's farm, a 30-minute drive from Jim's house. Randy's family could have survived indefinitely on the resources of their farm and the knowledge in the heads of her parents. Instead, they fell victim to a long-standing feud that boiled over with a neighboring family. One bad decision by Randy's brother led to a vicious outpouring of violence that resulted in Randy's parents being murdered and her family home burned to the ground. Despite her earlier assurance to Jim that she would be fine, she ultimately took Jim up on his offer to join him in the valley where he lived. Inevitably, those things that made Jim's valley attractive to him also made it attractive to outsiders looking for a place to weather the storm. Several times, Jim, his neighbors, and his friends found themselves fighting off outsiders intent on stealing their homes and their resources. With each encounter, Jim was finding diplomacy had little place in this new world. Discussion only seemed to buy you time until the guns came out. He struggled to keep his family and friends safe, but he also struggled with an underlying guilt because there had been times when he'd wished for this, that the world would reset, that the government would collapse and reveal itself for the fraud he knew it was. The thing he had not bargained for, the thing he had not anticipated, was how much violence, heartache, and hardship would come with the collapse. He was tired of killing, and tired of seeing people he knew die. Most recently, his coworker Alice, with whom he had a difficult relationship during their working career, had decided to come join them in the valley. She'd lost her husband and her mother. She saw the valley as a way to provide her son with greater protection. She did not even have the opportunity to settle in before she got herself killed helping save Jim's life. For Jim, that was just new guilt on top of the old. Jim didn't know what he was going to do. He did not want to be in charge, but found himself as the de facto leader of this group more often than not. He just wanted to be left alone. But it had been easier to hide in the world before the collapse. Now those that hid would find all that they worked to preserve stolen from under their noses. Could Jim continue to shun responsibility? Or was it time to step forward? Was it time to own the blood he'd spilled? Chapter 1. 3 months earlier. The coal-fired power plant at Carbo, Virginia, had never looked so desolate in its 70-year history. Until the world stumbled, the power plant was constantly busy. There were coal cars delivering fuel, operators monitoring gauges and switchgear, and heavy equipment zipping around. Sitting idle now for months, the facility was covered with a fine layer of gritty fly ash, oily coal dust, and soot. Perhaps that patina would never go away. Cecil Hughes had worked at the plant for nearly 40 years, the last 30 of those years in the machine shop. The machine shop was a medium-sized steel building roughly the size of a fast food restaurant. Its outer skin was pea-green metal of the type often found on industrial buildings in coal country. The inside of the steel structure had thick insulation that was covered